You're listening to Disturbing the Priest with Brandon Baddock. What's up, man?
Excuse me. We've been locked in this little room for ages and ages doing our album. I think it's probably our 14th or 15th studio album. Excuse me. I had to take a drink.
Yeah, no worries. Cheers.
Cheers, dude. So, what's been happening? Right now, I only moved into this new place in April this year. And like I was telling you on the phone the other day, this is like a construction site at the moment, but I'm working out this little room here, studio. You can see I've got my family behind me, my guitars.
Yeah.
And they're on the way. And here we are. So it's nice to finally do this this interview with you, Brandon, because I've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off only because we've been working so hard on this new album. So, and we have this deadline to deliver it by the end of this week. So,
Wow.
Pressured, the whole thing.
Well, very exciting and very justified too, because you must be running around like a madman, especially with your house currently.
That's right. Plus, we had this little tour, a Tourette. Just like 4 days, we broke off last week, and it was great to actually get out there and play together again. Aside from recording, it was great to play live to the audience again. And we told them we've got a new album out next year, next April. It will be on the Frontiers label.
Very exciting.
Entitled Defiance.
Defiance. That's awesome.
Read into that what you like, actually, but I mean, yeah, we're defiant.
So how long has this been in the works?
The album, we started round about sort of April time. And to tell the truth, on this album, I haven't been so proactive on the songwriting stage because I moved home and everything, and I was right behind. But I was a late sprinter, and I got caught up with it towards the end. And I've written a cracking song as well.
Yeah. So how has the writing and recording process been for Defiance?
It's been very much like the last one where we did Catharsis. It was when we did Catharsis during the COVID era, and we were locked in. And because we've got a Dutch singer, John, and Hans, our drummer, it's difficult to sort of get together anyway. So we actually emulated the whole sort of COVID thing again. We recorded it very much like that. Andy, the other guitarist, and my brother, Chris, came round here a couple of times, and we got the ideas flowing and got things together. But generally speaking, a lot of it, I mean, as you can see, I'm in an 8-foot by 8-foot room. I won't get many other musicians in here.
You can maybe squeeze in one more, it looks like, but
maybe,
that's a stretch.
Yeah, I've got a couple in here. But get rid of my babies.
yeah. Amazing. Now I've been like dying to ask you this. Is there any possibility of like vinyl reissues of any of the previous records?
Funnily enough, we've been approached on this subject by many different guys who want to release our albums, but a lot of them are still under sort of Japanese rule, because I mean, we had this period where we were Pony Canyon, and they still retain the rights for it. Now we're trying to get those rights back at the moment, mechanical rights especially. The digital rights, they stay in that domain, but obviously that's going to be their bread and butter as well. But yeah, we're trying to do that, because I'd love to have a vinyl box set out, in fact. All those albums, and it'd be great. And it's so difficult, because when we went out last week on tour, I mean, all the fans are asking, why don't you do some from this album? Why don't you do songs from this album? And a lot of the time we only have an hour to play, or maximum an hour and a half, so we've got to try and condense 14, 15 albums into that period, and it's not easy. Especially when Praying Mantis songs are on average about 5 or 6 minutes long.
Yeah, a 50-year time span, too.
Yeah, 50 years, man. 2024 will be our 50th anniversary.
Insane.
I know. And look, not a wrinkle on me.
Yeah. So that's going to be the big celebration then, putting out Defiance. to celebrate the 50 years. Yeah, yeah. How does this album stand out from the rest of the band's discography?
It's well, I mean, I've got to say, because I didn't write that many songs, it's great. No, it's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, like, some really good songs in there. Andy, the other guitarist, he's actually written three crackers on the album, so it's really good. Chris has done a lot of, you know, the lion's share as usual, and but it's been brilliant. It's sounding great. I mean, we're really pleased with it. We're actually tweaking the mixes as we speak. We've got to deliver it by the end of this week. We're going to master. We've sort of got the mastering booked in for Thursday or Friday this week. So
wow.
But we're close. We're close. We're close.
You guys have been very, very busy. Yeah. Very exciting. And are there any plans to, like, maybe do a US tour with the release of Defiance?
We've always wanted to do a US tour, but it's, you know, it's so difficult with the visas and things and the cost and the promoters, not, you know, it's difficult to get on that stage at the moment because of the money involved. And it's all financial, basically. And I mean, I'd love to do it. I mean, I wouldn't mind, you know, doing it and not earning any money as long as I don't lose money out of it. It's, you know, I've always wanted to do the States. We've as a band always wanted to do the States.
Yeah. It sucks. It sucks so much. There's so many bands who have announced tours over here, but yeah. Then, you know, a month before their show, it gets, you know, canceled because of visa issues and other
it's
bullshit.
Crazy. I mean, why do you have this? I mean, like, you guys can come over to the UK for about 30 quid, something like that, 30
yeah.
bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfair. It's really unfair. Now, 50 years, like, this is so awesome. I do want to celebrate. I talked to you off air about this, but I'd love to dive into every single Praying Mantis album.
I can remember, man.
yeah. Let's see. Hopefully the wine helps. Time Tells No Lies, 81. Jesus Christ. A minute ago. Yeah. you know, it must be crazy looking at this release you're doing now, Defiance, and then looking back at, you know, Time Tells No Lies. You know, how different was that writing or recording process?
Very different. Well, but basically it was all in the analog days, that one, you know, basically back to organic stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Just copy and paste and, like, yeah, we'll repeat that chorus there. But we try not to do that. You know, we actually try and play the whole song. And sometimes where the part is difficult, then we will cheat a little bit. But we use the technology to our advantage, really, because of time scales and things like that. It does work quicker. But I remember doing that album at Battery Studios in Willesden, where I used to live in London. And it's... lovely studio, just an analog studio, two-inch tape. We had Tim Freese-Green as our producer. He did the Canadian band Touch. That's right. And we love this. So we heard the stuff and we go, yeah, it'll do it for us. But, you know, the whole thing, we actually sang all the backing vocals organically. You know, all three of us were gathered, Chris, myself, and Steve Carroll, our other guitarist, and, you know, rest in peace. He passed away a few years ago. But we were all gathered around this microphone and we had to get it all right. You know, all of us had to be in tune, and no auto tune in those days. We had to get it right. And it was, the whole thing was organic, and we had to sing every chorus as well. You know, so it took a while, but we got the whole sort of thing going. And I mean, Tim Freese-Green was out of that, you know, the Mutt Lange school, that sort of thing, where they got, you know, like Def Leppard, like the big fat snare drum and stuff like that. And I remember that those days were great. I mean, just love them. I just love being in the studio. I mean, I love everything about music. I love rehearsing. I love being in the studio. Especially touring. It's great. It's another world for me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm curious, do you remember the budget you were working with, as well as how much studio time you got for that first album?
I can't remember the budget. I think we got about £30,000, you know, at that time.
Oh, wow.
And but obviously all that's recoupable, you know, by the record company. It was, I think we did it within about 4 weeks, actually. It was about 4 weeks recording.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is wow. Which is bad, you know, in this day and age for doing things organically and sort of playing a song from start to finish and singing it from start to finish as well. So.
Yeah, well, other bands that came up with Praying Mantis got like only like 2-3 days in the studio, so that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
All things considered.
Do you know what? I can't remember. I say 4 weeks now, but it could have been 2 weeks, actually, because, I mean, I remember we did it very close to Christmas. I think we started, we probably started it at the beginning of November, and then, you know, we were sort of through by the middle of December, I think. So, yeah, it's yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the next record, Predator in Disguise, came out 10 years.
Did they tell you, I mean, all these other bands, did they tell you that they did it in 3 days?
Yeah, Jaguar did it, had two.
Right.
I think Tokyo Blade had three or something.
Yeah.
Like, just ridiculous. And there's this band I had on, I'm not sure if you know Ruffians. They had 24 hours.
Wow.
To record their album.
You know, in those days, and that's why I can't remember, strange enough, but you were totally rehearsed when you went into the studio. You weren't writing in the studio. You had the songs there and then, and you just go in and hammer them out. And I remember the longest thing it was getting the drum sounds up. And, you know, I don't know why, you know, it took like 2 days to get a drum sound or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You now know, it's so, like, what do you use? Pro Tools?
Yeah. Sorry?
Do you use Pro Tools now?
I've used Pro Tools, but my favorite one is Logic.
Logic, yeah. So nice. You can just copy and paste. You can just, with the multi-track, move everything around. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to give away your secret, but.
Like I said, we use cheating to our, you know, benefit. I mean, we've done the groundwork. We've been there. We've done it.
So, you've earned it. Yeah.
Yeah, we've earned it. We've earned the right to cheat. Yeah. And like I said, we just use it to our advantage. They're just tools that we use to our advantage so we can get things done quicker.
Basically. Yeah, yeah. Now, do you remember?
The trouble is with this technology malarkey is you get sucked into it. And like you said, like, that will do. And you go, you can't. You just look into the ass of every fucking note, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why am I doing this? And you stop being as creative as you could because you're actually getting into the technological side of things, which I love as well, but then you've got to draw the line somewhere and just kind of rise above that and get back into the creative.
Just focused on one chord for like 5 hours, you know? Because you can just get so like niche and so specific with it. You know, crazy.
Exactly. Why?
Yeah, it might make you go insane, but you'll have like the most polished thing ever. I feel
that's it. You know? The polished chords.
Yeah, the polished chord. Maybe that can be the next record.
Yeah, huh? That's the next
album. Yeah, hey, cheers.
In Search of the Lost Chord. No.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, credit me. So. The second release came out 10 years after. What was the defining moment when you realized it is time for the second Praying Mantis record?
Well, we've just stumbled on that, really, because, I mean, the band almost broke up. Well, it did break up for a while because we didn't get an offer of an option on the second album. So we did. We all went our separate ways. Dave, who was the drummer, decided to manage the band with... We formed another band with Clive Burr, the late Clive Burr, God bless his soul. That band was Stratus. It was Escape, first of all, and then it became Stratus a little while later. And we actually wrote the album with Clive and went on from there, basically. And then that didn't get accepted when we tried to sell that album. So we put things on the shelf for a while, and then we got approached by Paul Di'Anno, all people. Paul Di'Anno came to us, or he came to Dennis. He went to Dennis first of all, Dennis Stratton. And Dennis phoned me up. He said, do you fancy doing a tour of Japan? You know, we go Paul Di'Anno. We'll have us like a bit of a hybrid super group, you know, Praying Mantis with Paul Di'Anno and Dennis Stratton of Iron Maiden, previously with Iron Maiden. And that was offered by the big Le Grand Fromage, the big cheese, Masahito out in Japan. He's the biggest rock DJ ever. So, he said to Paul, I think Paul was trying to get Battlezone out there at the time. Battlezone or Killers, I can't remember who it was. And that Massa just suggested this thing. So we went for this. And that's what put us on the map again, basically. We got that second bite of the cherry. And we recorded an album there, which was very fragmented because it just like all came out of the blue. We decided to make a band out of it. And Dennis then joined the band. And we came out with Predator in Disguise. And he was writing with another guy called, Chris O'Shaughnessy. And it's gone. Great matter. It'll come back to me later. And the album sounded very disjointed, and a lot of the drums were actually programmed on that album. So it's
wow.
Not a lot of people know that. It was done very cleverly at the time. But I mean, if you listen carefully, I mean it's very, but you know, a lot of people have done it. I mean, Satriani does it, you know.
Oh yeah. 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 Was it weird returning after like 10 years?
Sorry?
Was it weird returning to like making music for Praying Mantis after 10 years?
No. We got a second chance here. And we did that. We took that, embraced that, and we did a further, God knows how many albums with the Japanese, but you're going to tell me which ones these are in a minute.
Yeah. All right.
We did that live album there that came out as a live album and Live at Last. Mm-hmm. And Pony Canyon, the record company at the time, they decided they wanted to do a studio album, carry the relationship on. So that's how we started.
Yeah.
So after that live album, Predator in Disguise was the first one. Like I said, it was very rushed though, but it was enough to get us on the springboard, basically.
Yeah. And then 2 years later, A Cry for the New World.
Right, for the New World. And that was that was like more of a crossover, sort of getting into the technical side of things. You know, it was pre-digital, but it was still analog, but started using triggers. And I remember we went into a studio in Germany to mix it with a guy called Carly Trapp. And he had this big old, you know, mixing desk thing that he bought from the Bee Gees. but he started experimenting with sort of triggers and drums, and the whole of the drum tracks that we did in London were replaced by all these machine like triggers, you know. And not a lot of people liked it. And I think, you know, sort of going back, I've still got those master tapes actually.
Oh wow.
You know, there's time to actually maybe take a little sort of look at those and do a remix maybe.
Yeah, totally. You guys kind of moved away from the whole Praying Mantis theme too with that.
Yeah. Because
you had the skull planets, the bug, you know, and that's just like a crying eye.
Well, I mean, like Mantis, I mean, I always think of it. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, that image always conjured up a heavy metal band, where we weren't really heavy metal as such. You know, we're more rock. And I mean, our influences came from bands like Thin Lizzy and Wishbone Ash. You know, Wishbone Ash with all the vocal harmonies as well. Mm-hmm. So, all that during our growing up period in the, you know, mid-70s.
Yeah, very believable. You totally hear that. To the Power of 10 came out in 1995.
Yeah.
So did you start just working on that right after A Cry for the New World?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, all the albums seem to be about 3 years apart, didn't they? 2 or 3 years apart from each other.
In the 90s, every record is like 2-3 years until The Journey Goes On in 03.
Steve Winter, yeah, we, I mean, we're not proper rock stars, us lot, you know, because I mean, we all had day jobs, we got married and had children, and we needed to like support the
yeah,
that's sort of the, you know, that selfish thing of being a musician is of going out and touring with that, you know, that was no more. So, well, I mean, everyone was running their daytime jobs together with the band, and you know, in conjunction with the band, and you had this pair of trousers that was just, you know, everything. you couldn't split two ways, you know. It was difficult because, I mean, I couldn't actually go to work. I mean, I was lucky because I was self-employed, and you know, I was a carpenter myself. In fact, I made my own guitars in the early days and stuff like that. So,
oh wow, yeah,
but you cool. know, I've got to have a different head on when I'm doing an album. I say, right, I'm going to take 4 weeks off, and I'm going to concentrate on this. So that's where the difference lay with us. So we didn't capitalize on a certain album and just release another album straight away, which that gave a little bit of time. And because it was only with a Japanese company and it was licensed to companies like Music for Nations, and it didn't really get world recognition. It was only sort of well known in Japan. We sort of built a good fan base in Japan, but we couldn't sort of get it moving anywhere else, really.
Yeah, yeah. So many of, because I'm a collector, like physical media, and most of them have that Japanese, you know, spine. Yes. That's why reissues, listen, man, you know, in the States, there's so many, there's the whole new generation of fans that would love some of these, some like physical media, these. Speaking of that, the next record, which is, you know, my favorite, which actually came out the year I was born, Forever in Time in 98.
Dedicated to our father, Chris, and our father, he passed away, and we dedicated that album to him. And that song, Forever in Time, was about him.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And if you look at the cover, there's the photograph of Chris and me with Dad on the back cover. There was like a nice photograph of us, the family.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And it's also such an epic sounding album. It's like very theatrical in points.
That was a Chris Tangarini's production as well, because we came into, well, I say production, I mean, we did it, but I mean, we got him to mix it, and he took it out of the digital domain, because I mean, that was the first album we did where we had our own equipment. You know, we decided to buy our own equipment. We got like this massive $50,000 advance from Japan. So we said, right.
Oh my God. Yeah.
the time the gear wow. was expensive. It was like 15 grand, but we pocketed 35 grand between us.
Wow. I don't blame you, man. that's nice.
And it was great to have to be in the comfort of your own home. And because I did a loft conversion, an attic conversion in my house at the time. And that was my studio upstairs. I soundproofed it all. And it's great because, I mean, when you get an idea, you could sort of go upstairs and get that idea down straight away. And because it was in the digital domain, it's forever, you know. It's like whereas before, when you did a demo tape, we'd have it on a cassette, and you try and emulate that moment of you produced on cassette and going to a studio, into a 24-track studio, 48-track studio even, and you can never get the same, you know, what was that magic moment that you actually first put it down. So it's that's a great thing about the digital domain. You can just go up there and you go, poof, you've done it, you know, and it's there forever.
Yeah, totally. And that's what's great about, you know, Pro Tools, Adobe, is like you can just, everyone has a home studio now.
That's right, yeah.
And it's so nice. If you ever have a riff, you can just go to your office, you know, or closet, I guess. Nowhere to Hide, the 2000 came out. Again, the band's still going strong with releases, you know, every 2 to 3 years. What was the band's mindset into going to into the 2000s?
Just carry on while we can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, just... really. I mean, it was that, and that just gave us that drive. The people just the whole sort of advent of the internet, you know, the social media, that gave us that platform to actually, we embellished that to our advantage. Where I say that, embellish it, I mean, we're not that great at it, you know, the social media thing, and we should be doing a lot more with that. And in fact, I tried to get my daughters on board for a little while, but I wanted too much money.
Yeah, yeah. I find Nowhere to Hide to be like kind of like an underrated album. Like, how do you reflect on that record?
Which ones? Sorry,
Brad. Nowhere to Hide.
Nowhere to Hide. Yeah.
Nowhere to Hide.
Came out really well. Some good songs on that. I think that was the first one we actually used the a digital drum kit up on, in my loft, you know, one of the pads, ones that was playing on pads. So it's yeah, so everything was done up in my loft, even the drums.
Wow. Yeah. At that time, that must have sounded like unheard of, because you cannot do that in any random, you know, apartment or loft or anything.
No, not these days.
yeah, especially in the loud.
I mean, I soundproofed that whole loft with the intention that I knew I was going to use it to record, you know.
Ah, yeah.
I even had a floating floor in there, and I put a big steel door in at the top as well. So it's just like this, you know, double layers of drywall and triple layers, and it really killed it. So we could use it.
So yeah. Yeah, now the journey goes on in 2000. What's that?
You could be murdering someone up there and they nobody else would be.
That's the great about soundproofing, you know what I mean? It comes with many other benefits.
That's it.
It got dark. The journey goes on in 03 marks the end, you know, of starting in 91, like an album like, every 2 to 3 years.
That title, it was like, the journey goes on, and then it stopped.
It stopped. Yeah. Why haven't I not thought about that? Yeah. The journey, in matter of fact, ended. In 2000.
It was. Well, the reason it ended was it was the Japanese, that Japanese period, that whole thing. It spanned from Live at Last, Predator in Disguise, the first studio album, up until Journey Goes On. So it was a big 15-year relationship with the Japanese company Pony Canyon, as well as with Dennis Stratton. And after that finished, we all sort of fizzled out for a little bit, because Pony Canyon had decided they didn't want to continue with the international, you know, acts. So they just concentrated on their own commercial market. And so that was the end of that sort of Japanese relationship. But I'm still very much in touch with the old A&R guy who got us in there. And I mean, he actually got transferred to the Walt Disney department.
Wow.
I know. And he couldn't do this anymore. And he was in, I mean, we were reminiscing. The last time we were in Japan, we were all together in a club. And he was crying his eyes out because, I mean, he loved the band, you know, like, because he couldn't be involved in it anymore. So it's,
wow.
Yeah, it was a bit of a downfall for all of us. But but we pressed on and we continued. Then we picked ourselves back up. And then, because at that time, the later albums that we were doing in Japan were getting licensed by Frontiers Records, the record company that we're with now. And so we continued the relationship with them. It seemed nonsensical not to do so, you know. So we did that. And we've done four albums with them now. So it's yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very exciting. Now, in the making of this album, did the band feel like burnt out at all, which is how fast you guys were moving in the 90s?
We're all a lot older now, so I mean, things are a little bit harder, and I've got arthritis in my fingers and stuff like that. It's a lot more difficult to play these days. I've got tinnitus, I've got, you know, continuous tinnitus. I've got 7.5 kg squeezing my ears all day long, you know.
So. Oh, wow.
But, you know, you learn to live with it, you relax into it, and you have to do some meditation to try and alleviate it and just carry on, you know, doing. I'm always exercising as well. I'm always on the go, so I'm a pretty fit person for my age.
Yeah, yeah. I have a little bit of tinnitus just from going to way too many shows without hearing protection, especially in, like, those little basement shows. Just
imagine. Yeah, I mean, mine stems from, you know, playing rock music as well as being a carpenter, because, I mean, I was like always a power tool, circular saws, planers, routers, you know, things like that. It's just like, yeah, like I had no chance.
Yeah, those two things combined during the day and then at night, you know, you didn't really get a break.
No respite at all.
Yeah.
And you'd like put your headphones on and crank it up if you're there.
Yeah, your ears never got a break, man. Apparently there are like studies going on. You know, people are saying it is permanent. People have been saying it's a permanent thing, but there has been like some studies going on tinnitus. So hopefully in the next like decade, or so. Well, you know?
Probably it'd be no more anyway.
I don't know, man. I think there'll be more Praying Mantis albums coming out.
There will be probably more.
At this rate.
There's definitely going to be one. I said if I'm going to hang my boots up, it's going to be on the anniversary of Time Tells the Lies.
Yeah. Yeah. 2041.
What were we looking at? 2000. When did it come out? 1981.
81. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, right?
2031. Yeah.
Yeah. 31. Jesus. Sanctuary is the first record on Frontiers Records.
It is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. How did you get in touch with Frontiers?
How did we get in touch? Well, I mean, well, we, like I said, we were licensing, Pony Canyon were licensing the albums out to Frontiers in Europe.
Ah.
Well, so that's how he kept the relationship going. And we just decided just to carry on with them.
Yeah. How was it working with them, like for them being like your main label for the first time?
It's okay. I mean, they're great. I mean, everything's by the book with them, though. You've got to, like, you try sort of like to do little deals here and there, but I mean, I tell you, you know, it doesn't work with them like that. It's got to be by the book. You can't have this before you have this. You go, you know, everything's got a structure to it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Now,
at the end of this month, and then after that, we got to say goodbye to it until April. It won't be released until April. But that's to do with the whole distribution and everything, and of course all the PR, you know, the marketing and PR that goes behind it. So
totally, yeah. Now, are there going to be like physical releases with this? Because I know with when you get an album now, it's like an 8-month wait time for it to even be pressed. Are there going to be like a vinyl release or a CD release?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about getting the actual physical product out by April, which is pretty good.
Awesome. So it's going to coincide with...
The vinyl thing might take a little bit longer. I mean, there's still sort of like a bit of delay on vinyl production, isn't there?
It's a mess. Yeah, I've heard.
To the extent where a lot of our pressings were inferior on the last album, on the Catharsis.
Oh, really?
Was sent back because it was just things were jumping, you know, the thing was skipping and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it's a good press. It just sucks, man, because like bands get bumped all the time, so it takes like 8-9 months to get something pressed, you know, and then to have it be like faulty,
especially, I think, you know, and this, you know, especially with the whole thing with the vinyl coming back quite big time actually as well, you know, it's great. I mean, I loved an old album. I hate CDs. It's just like you can't read them. You get, I mean, most of my time, and you know, when albums came out, especially a gatefold sleeve, you just like sit there and open it up and you'd love it, you know. You take that album out of the sleeve very carefully, put your middle finger in it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You should teach a class.
And you'd blow across it.
You got the lyrics, you know, Praying Mantis is such an amazing vinyl band, I feel. Like, it's, like, perfect for that format.
That's right, yeah. And yeah, the pictures, the artwork as well lends itself to that as well, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Reading the whole thing as well from start. And these CD things, you can't read the print.
Yeah, you're using a magnifying glass just to see who made the album.
And then the bloody things, unless they're in the cardboard, you know, the digipacks, they just break anyway. And
yeah. Now, in terms of album art, you know, Legacy's next in 2015. We've made it to 2015 at this point.
That was quick.
Yeah. From 81. One of the band's best albums ever, seriously. And it's so cool to see, you know, how long you guys have been around. And in 2015, you know, top three easily, in my opinion. What was the band's creative chemistry during the making of this album?
just it was just like knowing each other, the way we each other worked, you know. I mean, by this time, well, Legacy was the first album we did with the Dutch guys. In fact, that's when the Dutch guys joined, and John and Hans, and they loved the band. We saw them in Holland when we were actually doing a gig in Holland, and we asked them if they fancied joining the band. They jumped at the chance, but they expected us to be a lot bigger than we actually are. that's a crazy thing about it, because I mean, we've got John, our singer, and Hans, the drummer. They do their own little things as well. They're in a couple of cover bands as well, so tribute bands and stuff like that, which I hate, all that tribute stuff.
Yeah.
So because we don't get that many gigs offers, they've got to take on their gigs, and then we do get a gig offer, and then it coincides, it clashes with the ones that they're doing. So that's always a very fraught period between us. So we're going, oh no, this is, we can't be doing this, because our fans expect to see the band as it is on the record, on stage. You know, we don't want to hire in another singer or another drummer, really. So, but we have done that with a drummer, but the singer's a totally different thing, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Gravity coming out in 2018 sounds kind of like a direct follow-up, with the sound being very similar. Was this a conscious decision?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was just working with the same group of musicians, really, that lent itself to that. That's basically it. I mean, yeah, good songs again. Everyone, the great thing is about all the reviews we've ever had on the albums, they've all been really top reviews, and we've never had really, I mean, there's one or two that we maybe have, or it's not that, not as good as the last one or something like that, but they never said it's crap or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think there's really a bad Praying Mantis album. You know, like you have a very consistently good discography, which it's hard to say that about a lot of bands that like have their debut in 81.
Yeah, you know? I think a lot of that, Brandon, has got to do with the longevity between each album. We're not forced to write it straight away, so we like to look at things and pull songs apart and put them back together again in a different order, and we got that. And with the digital domain now, you've got that beauty, you know, that comfort of doing so like that, so you can actually take things apart and then go back to the drawing board and get it back in shape very quickly as well.
Yeah, and that's what must have been the case for Catharsis, like just in quarantine, everything, like you're doing it on your own computer. You know, really getting specific with the chords, the notes.
It's difficult though sometimes, you know, that was a very difficult period. And I found the same with this album, because we did it like this. Because there's certain bits, like John, for instance, our singer, he'd be doing it in a studio in Holland with his girlfriend's father, he's got a studio. But his girlfriend's father doesn't know what we want, you know. We wanted to do a sort of live sort of chat and things like that, but they couldn't get the technology together at his place. So if you say, oh, John, you can do better than that, come on, and he said, oh, what's wrong with that? You know, you want to put that big arm around him, you know. Basically, you can do better than that, you know. I know you, man. But, you know, not having that physical contact is a very difficult thing. Because you can't actually get the best out of anybody to that. You know, being in the same room together, you just feed off each other, you feed each other, you know, the way you're working. But being apart, it doesn't quite gel in that manner.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That's what I've heard a lot, you know, especially with bands in quarantine when they were just sending each other riffs. You kind of lose, like, being able to, like, bounce off creativity off one another, you know.
And when you try, you know, when you say to one of the other members, "Oh, could you try it like that?" And, no, what's wrong with that?
Yeah,
just try it, see if it works, you know. So yeah, people get up to you, and then the phone goes dead for a while, the computer goes dead for a while. Yeah, you may be right.
Well, you know, that's the pretty much the release right now. Now we have Defiance, which is very, very exciting. I cannot wait. You guys are awesome live. And I do want to ask, with especially with how the last few records have been fantastic, have you thought about maybe doing a future live album after Defiance? Is there any plans? I
mean, as long as we're all together and, you know, alive and kicking, then yeah, there's going to be, we're going to do another best of very soon as well, because all the rest of. Yeah, there's all that on the cards. Like to do a live DVD as well again. It's you know, the world's still our oyster as long as we're around.
I'm
you know, losing the hearing rapidly, but I'm gonna try to save as much of it as I can.
But and you said you're like meditating for another method.
Just to do a relaxation exercise and stuff like that, a bit of yoga as well, and you know, just to. And the heavy, you know, so deep, heavy breathing, deep breathing, deep breathing when I go to sleep, and it helps me to get to sleep, because that's worst when it's worst at night, basically. But I find reading helps me quite a lot, actually, just reading a book. And that sort of gets me tired enough to fall asleep. And the tendency is going, ah!
With 50 years, it's been so long. What's your opinion on streaming and how much the industry has changed?
It is what it is, isn't it? I mean, I heard back in the 90s that this was going to happen. And I couldn't believe it. You know, music will be on a card. And, you know, like, no, what are you talking about?
I assume why there's not certain Praying Mantis records on like Spotify and stuff, because of copyright. Label,
yeah, but things, you know, right? We're trying to get that organized, actually, because I mean, like I said, we're trying to get these albums back from the Japanese, from the Pony Canyon, the rights back to these, and they've got the digital rights, so I don't know why they're not putting them out, because a lot of those albums are not on that, you know, on that streaming service, you know, on Spotify or anything like that, where they're losing money and we are as well. Take control of it.
Yeah. Now,
streaming is what it is now. I mean, we're not earning lots of money out of it, but we're actually getting lots of plays out of it now where we didn't before. You know, actually, it's recognition.
Yeah. Well, you have a whole new generation of fans now, you know, because I'm coming from like the Spotify streaming generation where, you know, it does rabbit hole into like, you know, getting it to like British New Wave, and then Praying Mantis is in there, like Time Tells No Lies, and then you get into the records, and then that's like, you know, it streaming really should be paying artists. It's quite a shame how, you know, you'll get 12 cents every million streams or whatever the number is, whatever ridiculous thing is, but at least, like, you know, you find fans that way. And it causes someone like me to like want to buy the physical media, want to buy merch, want to buy concert tickets. So there is that plus side. But unfortunately, people are listening to the music for free, which.
Yeah, that's it. But, you know, it's great because when you go to concerts, when we do a gig, it's you see this young audience and go, oh, you were. You must be the daughter or the son of the dad. No, we just love this music, man. There's a whole sort of new generation of fans, and we never got that in the past, obviously. We see the our old mates come to the gigs as well, the old boys come to the gigs as well, but it's great to see a whole new batch of fans as well.
Young, feel great.
Yeah, it's brilliant, yeah, to come in. But it's still mainly dominantly male.
Yeah. A little bit of a sausage fest. Yeah. now, you know, before you were saying you guys aren't really British New Wave, you're more like rock. Like, how do you identify the band sound? Like a classic rock band?
Yeah, I'd say
a hard rock.
Rock. I mean, I learned my sort of licks from in the blues. I still play blues now, you know. I sort of jam with bands and stuff, do that, but it's rock, it's classic rock, it's even a bit progressive as well, in the old days. I mean, when you listen to some of the early stuff that we did, it's sort of quite proggy. But yeah, classic rock generally. Yeah, we're not. And we border on AOR as well because of the song. In fact, a lot of songs of this album is quite this album, Defiance, is quite a soft rock album actually. With a couple of ballads on it, and you'll hear it. You know, some interesting like little changes on there.
I am very, very excited. Defiance comes out next year, 2024. Tino, thank you so much for doing this, man. Really, really appreciate it. What's the best way for fans to stay in touch with everything Praying Mantis?
Our websites. We've got the Praying Mantis website. Just dial in Praying Mantis the band, and you get the website straight away. Otherwise, you get the bug.
Of course. Again.
I always wanted to do a video like Praying Mantis versus Scorpions. It was like we do the whole Run DMC thing where they're like, they crash through. You
know? There's a lot of those on YouTube.
Run DMC, Praying Mantis. Yeah. And we'll get loads of hits on YouTube for that because everyone will think there's like a scorpion fighting a praying mantis, you know, because everyone loves all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. You know what you got to do? Instead of like an Eddie, have like a big praying mantis go on stage or something.
It's going to be a big mechanical praying mantis for the that'll be the anniversary of 2031. How about that?
For the 60-year anniversary, we'll do a follow-up.
Yeah, whole set of the Time Tells No Lies album.
Well, this has been awesome, man. My name is Brandon Baddick, and this is Disturbing the Priest.